comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United here on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. This is episode number 72, and I'm your host, Greg Mahochko, and it has been almost two damn months, since the last show. It was before Christmas. It was the first Saturday that Rogue One, a Star Wars story, was in theaters. My buddy RJ and I sat in my truck. It was a truck episode of a different flavor, but we sat in my truck and talked about it after experiencing the movie, and now we're going to talk about something else. Came across a report actually earlier this week, and they kind of snuck it in. As you know, Netflix always tells us, you know, about every month what's new that they're adding, and they try to keep us in the loop as far as, shows, be it, you know, Netflix originals mostly. And we know some of the Netflix originals, especially, you know, like the Marvel. We had a good warning. I guess warning's as good a word as any, but, you know, a good announcement ahead of time for Neil Patrick Harris's, well, not his, but the one he's in, Series of Unfortunate Events. Of course, Iron Fist trailer's out. I shared that earlier in the week as well. You know, Defenders is coming. You know, I think we're going to get a Punisher series out of all that. The Ranch. I mean, Netflix is doing some great stuff with their original programming. Of course, they also get, you know, movies and TV shows and, you know, be it sitcoms or hour-long dramas, things like that, reality shows. You know, Netflix is doing what Netflix has kind of always done, and that's dominate, for lack of a better term. They did so well in the direct, the DVD delivering, you know, system that they put Blockbuster out of business. You got to go back a few years for that. Kids, hey kids, it's your Uncle Greg, and I'm here to tell you some history. Back before Netflix, if you wanted a movie to watch that you didn't own, you had to go to a thing called a rental store, and you had to rent it, and you had to return it a few days later. And this was back before DVDs, so you actually had a VHS cassette, and you had to rewind it. And if you didn't rewind it, they usually charged you 25 cents to put it in their machine that rewound it 10 times faster than your VCR. That's your history lesson, in case you're 10. I don't know. And if you're 10, maybe Nerds United is not the best avenue for you. Sometimes I swear and drink. Anyway, the announcement that I saw was that Netflix has announced a show, an original show for, it's supposed to be coming out in 2017, and it is Castlevania. It's based on the wildly popular series of video games by the same name that, you know, tell the story of the Belmont family who tries to kill Dracula and other vampires, etc., which is great. I've always been team kill the vampires rather than team sparkly vampires. Blade was always my guy, and not with a sparkly vampire kid. I don't know. All I know is that it was some illegal activity this 100-year-old vampire was engaging in with a 16-year-old girl, but everybody wanted to look past that because he looked young. Anyway, it was creepy. That being said, Twilight's bullshit. Castlevania is coming in 2017 to Netflix, and the basis of this week's episode, of this episode, is that video games don't often translate very well to other mediums. You could go through the history of, you know, video games that have been, you know, attempted to be made into movies, and there have been a lot more misses than there have been successes. You can go back to 1993, and I was 11. Technically, I was 10. I hadn't quite had my 11th birthday yet. Super Mario Brothers came out, and who would have thought, you know, Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo, you know, they're supposed to be a, you know, good movie. It's the brothers who are plumbers, and, you know, there's Koopa and Princess, yada, yada, yada. The only problem was that it sucked. I mean, it was, it. I said, I wasn't even 11 years old yet, and I knew that it sucked. So I didn't ever put any stock in Super Mario Brothers, the movie. Enjoyed the crap out of the games. But you look at some of the properties that they perhaps have always valued a little too high to turn into movies. Like, there's never been a Zelda movie, and that is, I mean, that's a rich tapestry of you know, history that they could be do, story arcs, things like that. When you jump up a little bit, you know, into this millennium, into the 2000s. In 2001, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and then a couple years after that, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. Now, I'll be honest with you, I didn't mind the movies. It was, for me, because I don't think I've actually ever played a Lara Croft Tomb Raider video game. So for me, it was like Indiana Jones, you know, that's female-led. I mean, you know, it was a little different, because Indiana Jones was fighting Nazis or demonic, you know, demon-worshipping tribal cult leaders. Or in Crystal Skull, communists. Anyway, whereas Lara Croft in her movies was, you know, always just the Illuminati or somebody who was just seeking more power, which that's what the Nazis were after as well. If you remember, that's why they wanted the Ark of the Covenant, obviously, for all of the powers that it held within it, and immortality in the Holy Grail, or the Last Crusade. So, you know, just always after power. So that was a common theme. Plus, things that you may not have remembered: Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the first one, 2001. Obviously, Angelina Jolie, John Voight, her real life father, played her on screen father as well, which was rare. If you got to go back, but they had some bad blood between them in the 90s. I don't know all the details. I just wanted to say bad blood. But that 2001 movie also gave us a young Daniel Craig on screen, who would of course later become James Bond. Lara Croft Tomb Raider in 2003, The Cradle of Life, gave us Gerard Butler, who would go on to be King Leonidas, etc., etc. So anyway, those were, I mean, probably a little bit more box office successes, because part of that, I think, was the name Angelina Jolie that, you know, she brought to it. She's a good box office draw, but critically, I mean, I don't think those two movies were very successful. Even if you go as recently as last year, and Assassin's Creed. Now, this is a movie I admit I have not yet seen. It is a movie that I definitely have on my interest list. I'm not sure exactly. It's actually still playing in a theater near me. but, you know, with the one-year-old, that I don't get out very often to get to the theater. But anyway, it was just released in theaters, actually, a week after Star Wars. So it definitely got, you know, kind of overlooked there a little bit. Opening weekend, it did just over $10 million, and it's only grossed $54 million, which is, and that's as of about a week ago. And that's well below half of its estimated budget of $125 million. So, but it's, gosh dang, it's Michael Fassbender, and about everything he does is gold, even if I guess even if, you know, you don't like the premise or anything, he's so good. Michael Fassbender, so good. In fact, I don't want to say encourage. I dare you. No, I'm going to say encourage. I will say encourage. I encourage you to go back and watch the DC movie that was... Oh, crap. It just escaped me now. Hold on. I this is going to drive me crazy because it's right there. I can see the character. I know the name is right on the tip of my tongue. I just can't quite find it. And the Jonah Hex. Yeah. I encourage you to go watch Jonah Hex and watch Michael Fassbender's performance in that, because, I mean, you can say what you want about Jonah Hex, and a lot of people have. There are worse movies that have been made, believe me. So that was, that's not the worst that you can find cinematically speaking. But that was, you know, Assassin's Creed, tremendously successful video game series. In fact, I'm playing, not right now as I record this, but in my PlayStation, I have Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is the one that kind of takes place in Victorian England, late 1800s. Enjoying the heck out of that game, but you know, I think what is important to kind of keep in mind is that, and we'll make this point here in a minute, but the time that it takes to play a video game. You can go back and you can play Super Mario Brothers and hit all the, you know, all the shortcuts and everything. I mean, I'm talking old NES version of Super Mario Brothers, hitting all the shortcuts and be done in 8-10 minutes, you know, whatever it takes, without worrying about trying to rack up points or, you know, worrying about hitting the mushrooms, getting extra lives, you know, the little fire flower. I mean, you can just zip through it very quickly. But I think, well, Let me review a couple other video game, at least in my mind, video game type theory movies, and then we'll come back to my theory there. 2014 saw what I think, you know, it's a sci-fi movie that has no actual ties to a video game, except how my brain perceived it when I watched it, is Edge of Tomorrow. Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt, Bill Paxton, and that was, Edge of Tomorrow was not the original title for the movie, and I think the initial title, if I remember correctly, was Live, Die, Repeat. I know that ended up being a tagline, but Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise, you start out, you're essentially in the thrust into a middle of the battle, and you move on a little bit, you have a few successes, and then you get killed. So then you start back where the movie starts, you know, back, you know, dropped in the same place. Essentially, and I'll try to say this without spoiling it, but you're, every time you die, instead of save points, instead of actually being dead, you go back to the beginning. And the character has to figure out a little bit more every life, if you will, every time out, you know, how to get a little bit further to succeed in the mission of, you know, surviving. So Edge of Tomorrow, I think they're making a sequel, but it's worth a watch, because it's kind of got that unique premise. So that's one as well. But another one, and I don't think I can watch this one. I just don't think I have the stomach for it. Hardcore Henry. This was the, for lack of a better term, I'm just going to call it, I don't want to call it a Russian movie, but it's got Tim Roth. It's got Charlton Copley, if I'm pronouncing that right. Some names that you're familiar with. And this is the one where it's all first person. You know, V, I know you've seen the previews and trailers for it over time. You don't ever actually see, at least in the trailers, you don't. I mean, if, I guess if your character looks in to a mirror, you see what you look like. But for me, it reminded me of every first-person shooter that I ever played, which when I'm controlling things and I can slow down and you know, watch things unfold, that's great. But like this, I think, would be a little too much Blair Witch Project, shaken camera, you know, with just a lot of like stimuli, you know, just every hitting you from all angles, not what I'm needing, and not particularly what I'm wanting out of a movie watching experience. So Hardcore Henry, not for me. I know that there are people out there, obviously, who that's right up their alley. Let's see if that one. So that one had about a $2 million budget and opened in April of last year to a $5.1 million opening weekend and grossed just over $9 million. I think select theaters probably, you know, partook of that. It's only 96 minutes, but again, interesting concept if that's your thing. I mean, if you don't mind that first-person view, because that's exactly what it is, then more power to you. It's just not necessarily my cup of tea. I say all that, and you know, in talking about video games and how they translate, if there's one thing that's, you know, I'm going to break away from video games for a minute. There's been one, I guess, flaw in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that's the villains. You know, you have Ultron, you have Loki, you have, you know, the, oh crap, I can't even remember the name, the dark elf from Thor 2. You have the Yellow Jacket. I mean, you have villains that, while memorable, aren't, you know, I mean, they're not the best, most fleshed out villains, and I know that's funny to say about Ultron because he's, you know, a robot, but they're not the most fleshed out, believable villains. And I'm not even getting into DC because, you know, we're just not there yet, or they're not there yet. But that's the one complaint I think most about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Whereas you look at the Netflix stuff, you know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, coming up later this year, we'll get Iron Fist. We've had actually two seasons already of Daredevil, but you have some villains there that not only do you get to see them, you know, you get a little backstory on them, you get some history, you get to see them in multiple facets of life. Look at Daredevil season 1 and Kingpin and Vincent D'Onofrio, an amazing Kingpin. You see his brutality, but you see his softer side. You see the fat kid who was bullied, who, you know, kind of became what Kingpin became. When you look at Jessica Jones, you have the Purple Man, you know, aka Kilgrave, and you find out that he was, you know, part of a medical experiment that essentially gave him these abilities, and why it turned him into such a bastard, you know. And credit to David Tennant, because I thought Tennant was phenomenal in that series. You look at Luke Cage and the you know, villains, and I think you can call them villains, between Copperhead and the lady councilwoman, Shades. I mean, there's some really good villains in the Luke Cage series. And even beyond that, I mean, you can get into some of the DCCW stuff, the Flash, Arrow, I guess. Those would be kind of the two that main ones that I watch. The reason being, Legends of Tomorrow is more of a, like an episodic thing. So while you have the main villain kind of running through, especially in the first season, you had Vandal Savage. Right now you have, in season 2, kind of like a Damien Dark, I guess Damien Dark and Eobard Thawne kind of team up there throughout history, which is kind of weird. So you got those, but you get more, I guess you get more out of your villains because you have more time to develop the stories. That's kind of what I'm all coming down to. So I've said all that to say this and get to my point about 20 minutes in, is that Castlevania on Netflix has a very real chance to succeed, because while you have played these video games for hours, I mean, I admit I'm not the best at video games. I know that. But at the same time, these video games now, when you're spending $50-$60, you want to get your money's worth. So video game developers know that. And so they're not making a game that you can beat in an hour and, you know, let it collect dust on the shelf. They're having games that you can sit down and invest some time in. Skyrim, that's not one that I've played, but was that like 100 hours or something of gameplay or more? I mean, you can go online, multiplayer stuff on Halo and things like that, and just play for hours on end. But you can't really realize that and flesh out a story for movie theater in, you know, a time frame that's somewhere between, let's say, 90 minutes and 115 minutes. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. We'll go over a little over 2 hours, but you don't want to go 2.5 hours, because then you're getting dangerous close to Avatar time, and nobody has time for that. So Castlevania has a chance to succeed because you can flesh this story out. You can tell it. You know, Netflix, at least their hour-long dramas, like, for example, like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, their Marvel shows, they drop 13 episodes at a time. So that's 13 hours right there. And by the way, if you want a fun Netflix original that you can watch with your kids, Trollhunters. I'm telling you, it's a badass little cartoon. It's from the mind of Guillermo del Toro, if that tells you anything. It's got some good graphics, good storyline. I've already watched the first season, like 22, 26 episodes, something like that. And I'm itching for season two. And my son, while he doesn't understand it yet, he's thinking the same. But you have that opportunity on Netflix or an Amazon Prime or a Hulu, you know, any of these, you know, streaming services that offer original content. You have the opportunity there to tell a good story over an extended period of time. And what's nice about this Castlevania show for Netflix is that they are saying Castlevania Season 1 Part 1 is coming in 2017. So maybe you're getting 8 episodes. Even still, that's about 8 hours probably of Castlevania content. And again, as I stated before, Castlevania is the good kind of vampire show, because it's where the vampires are dead or dying or hunted, rather than where they're living amongst human population in 2008 or whatever year that crap was, and hanging out and dating high school girls when they're 100 years old. Again, that's a little creepy. But anyway, you could do more things like this. Theoretically, you could do a Metroid, you know, series, put that on, you know, Amazon Prime or something. The door is now open for video game to cross into other medium and be successful without feeling rushed, without feeling like you have to tell, you know, a big chunk of story in a little chunk of time, which is what we've seen traditionally from video game to movie transitions. So that's really the only thing that I had to say. And I did a good job of spending 25 minutes or so sharing said thoughts. What do you think? Do you think that Castlevania can be a success on Netflix? Do you think that it should not, you know, should stick to just the video game medium and the more interactive experience? What would be some other games, if you like this idea, that you'd like to see, you know, cross over into this other realm, if you will, of entertainment. So leave those thoughts in the comments. I had a contest or something. Okay. I know what I was going to do now. If you made it this long, I've got an idea for my next episode, and that is poking holes in Disney movie plots. I've got a couple examples like Beauty and the Beast and Tangled, Tangled being a bit more recent. But there are some just obvious holes that you get to thinking about, and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And that's because I'm an adult, and I'm looking at kids' movies. Obviously, I've got a kid now. I have a good excuse. So somewhere in the comments, throw me a Disney movie suggestion, and I will poke some holes in it, and we'll all have a good laugh at Disney's expense because they are sitting on billions of dollars, and I'm recording this when I should be folding laundry. It all seems to balance out somehow. So anyway, this has been episode number, I forget the number. How do you like that? I believe I said it was 72. That's what I'm sticking with. Again, Castlevania, Season 1, Part 1 coming to Netflix sometime in 2017. I think it'll work in this fashion, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts. Make sure that you comment, tweet, retweet, interact. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. And I got nothing. I there's no real nerdy way to no nerdy catchphrase to exit out the show this time. So may the force be with you. That's about all I got.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.